always walking round street by street and town to town, cause it's the best way I found to keep my spirits up and my worries down, my mind distracted with the constant sound of my heels shuffling and my footsteps pound. Walking rounds the way I'm wound, and there ain't no telling where I'm bound, but I hear you say, you're gonna have to settle down someday.
Jordan Tice, hi, welcome to Roots Radio.
Hey, Craig. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Cross town here. We're not far away, but circumstances dictate we have a distancey conversation. Congrats on Motivational Speakeasy. Really enjoy this. This record is taking me back to a phase of my music fandom when this style of guitar, fingerstyle guitar and vocal album, was very front and center in my world when I discovered John Fahey and Richard Thompson and Pierre Bensusan, and I was reading acoustic guitar and writing for Acoustic Guitar Magazine. And, you know, it was kind of like that, and practicing a lot, working on styles that had come both from the Piedmont blues artists of the, you know, laid down in the 30s and then revived, and some of the more elaborate English, you know, with Celtic overtones. But there's a whole lot of traditions woven into this record. I think one of the things that struck me that seemed to explain some of the sound, which I did not know before I did a little research here reading, was that, if I saw it correctly, you spent some time on the road with David Bromberg opening shows. Is that right? And what was the extent of that?
Yeah, I did. Basically, my mother used to play in the first all-female bluegrass band with David's wife, Nancy. So I got to know him through kind of that strange connection. And then, you know, as I got kind of just deeper into American kind of folk music, he quickly became just someone I admired. And I had sent him the Horse County record, my previous record, and he seemed to really enjoy it. So then I asked him if I could open some shows for him. And that kind of just became in a lot of ways, like an arena to kind of test out a lot of these songs that I was kind of working on over the last like 2 years or so.
Well, how would you describe to folks who are not familiar with the intricacies of acoustic guitar and the different approaches to it and the different traditions, what thread, what strain his fingerstyle guitar and yours come from?
Kind of, I would say most specifically, like the ragtimey kind of end of blues playing. Mm-hmm. David very much spent a bunch of time and learned a bunch of tricks from the Reverend Gary Davis. He took guitar lessons from him and then became a close kind of friend, and even like a, I don't use the word like caretaker, but just, you know, he helped him out in his older age, kind of living in New York. He'd drive him places and things like that. So that kind of like, you know, not just doing the alternating bass thing with the thumb and playing a melody over top, but kind of doing a little more intricate kind of counterpoint lead line type things, like a lot of kind of musical moves derived from piano. I would say maybe that's the type of playing that I really appreciate. And, you know, David does as well. And I learned a bunch through David.
How far back does that desire for you to play like that go in your life as a guitar player?
I really kind of got into trying to play like this pretty recently in a lot of ways. Really, my first attempts only go back as far as like 2015. But I got into it quick because I really, really gravitated towards it. But I would say the reason that I gravitated towards it is because those types of moves kind of, to me, strike a chord with one of the tenets, kind of fundamental musical tenets of my ethos, and that is kind of looking for these cool fundamental type sounds and moves on the guitar, like not necessarily like the most virtuosic thing or like the most extemporaneous kind of abilities on the guitar, but just like these cool little nuggets of music on the guitar. And it seems like that those types of players were about that in their guitar parts that they created. So, you know, kind of, and I've always kind of appreciated that kind of ethos in, you know, all the music I listen to. So kind of discovering this kind of ragtimey way of playing and the tradition of doing it, I kind of very quickly, you know, was like, ooh, that, I want to do that, you know?
Yeah. It occurs to me that you and I have never really had a deep conversation about your background. I've never really followed the chapters, but I can learn a lot by the various records you've made because they're each quite different. But you alluded to your mom being a bluegrass musician, but Take me back to where you were raised and what the musical circumstances were.
Yeah, so I'm from Annapolis, Maryland, and both of my parents are bluegrass musicians, and I kind of started playing guitar, rock and roll at first, had a high school rock band, and then just on a kind of whim went with a family friend up to the Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival and, you know, saw Nickel Creek and Tim O'Brien, Del McCurry Band, Ricky Skaggs, just kind of, you know, everybody who was kind of mainstream on that circuit at that point. And also met a lot of people. So, you know, the bluegrass thing was attractive just because I liked the music a lot. And, but also just because it was like an outlet to play music. It was a community. It was, you know, all of a sudden there's like all these, you know, you get interested in that and build some abilities doing that. All of a sudden there's all these people to play music with and interact with. So that was really attractive to me as well. So I got kind of involved around the age of 16, 17 in the Mid-Atlantic bluegrass scene, playing with a number of kind of bluegrass and bluegrass adjacent artists, and also studying jazz guitar and kind of listening to a bunch of different things. I've always listened to just about everything under the sun.
Did you go to a music, I think you went to music, formal music training, academy, school, college. Did that right?
Yeah, I went to Towson University, which is one of the state universities of Maryland, but I majored in composition there. And took some jazz and classical guitar lessons. And then I had at this point met a number of the kind of young pickers, a lot of which were kind of up in Boston. So as soon as I graduated, I just kind of on a whim moved up to Boston, paid cheap rent, got a job, and just picked with a bunch of people.
What year would that have been?
That would have been 2009. Fall of 2009.
Yeah, the mid-late 2000s in Boston around Berkeley were really, really kind of epochal in the story of acoustic music, because there was suddenly a lot of young players were going to get formal training, and New England Conservatory and Berkeley were two of the cores, and Berkeley started to develop a program for traditional music, progressive-minded, but you had to be able to read and write, and you really got into the warp and woof of the music and produced some incredible careers that we get to have benefit from now. So it must have been a great scene. I almost tried to get up there with a video camera and document at the time, because I knew that there was so much going on. Did you start to form a picture of what you wanted to do and be as a musician, and did that change with time in dramatic ways?
Yeah, I would say that is constantly changing, and I expect it to keep changing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, like so right when I started playing guitar, I instantly started writing music, little instrumental rock ditties that I'd layer down on a 4-track Tascam tape recorder. It's funny, I've never really felt like, you know, like, okay, like even with bluegrass, like my involvement in that music is to like mimic, you know, like just be this role of guitar in that music, you know? I've always kind of just skirted the edges of it in a way, and really just tried to use those kind of situations to make music I enjoy, and just kind of really stay a little kind of open to other things as well. And then 2015, I started writing songs. All my work up till that point was instrumental. Mm-hmm. And then that continued with Motivational Speakeasy, but adding kind of almost completely abandoning bluegrass in a lot of ways. It's really more folk and blues kind of centered. And now I'm kind of working on some music that that will involve drums, kind of an extension of a lot of the music on Motivational Speakeasy, but like fleshed out a little more. So, you know, that's going to be a whole different scene, a whole different world. So,
well, I really like how there's an unpredictability. I mean, I listened back and really enjoyed the record, Long Story from 2008. That's very much a new acoustic, new grass, instrumental, strength in numbers style album with virtuoso players. But then two or three years later, you make The Secret History, a neoclassical, almost minimalist, really abstract and beautiful. I've told you in the past how much I love that record. I turn back to it all the time. It's a life favorite.
You're one of like 13 people that.
Well, I'll buy the T-shirt and ride the ride. But what is that? You're kind of getting at this, but I mean, just radically approaching each project with a different mindset and skill set and vision.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to just like radically changing interests and listening habits, you know?
Yeah.
But there are also some constants, you know. I think like the way I write music kind of stays the same in a weird way throughout all these things. And then the whole kind of aspect of interpreting it on the guitar, you know, there's definitely some, I do think there are some kind of stylistic constants throughout these different trends, but I mean, I think it really comes down to just like, I'm always listening to stuff, always inspired by stuff. And, you know,
when you speak of that, the way you compose music, is there a way of putting your finger on that? Is there something that kind of leads you or logistically, or, I mean, like sort of practically speaking about, that gets it a method?
No, I would say like if I was studying myself in a music theory class or something, but there's some like kind of just harmonic and kind of, melodic trends, kind of, tendencies, that remain consistent throughout all these kind of, you know, whether it be like a string band type situation or a solo guitar type thing or a song. It's more of that type, you know, like our harmonic and melodic language, I think, that is the constant, I guess, is what the way I describe it.
I think you're sexy and you're afraid to be alone. We're a match made in heaven, so let's go and build us a home. We'll build it real high and we'll build it all around, because we don't know love from a hole in the ground. But let's just thank the good Lord for this bad little idea we had. It's exactly what we wanted. Lord knows we wanted it so bad.
Well, given the timing of the release of Motivational Speakeasy and something about the cover art, I sort of jumped to the conclusion that this was a product of the time alone during quarantine year. But no, in fact, you recorded it last fall in late 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So what did set the wheels in motion for this? Why did you work with Kenneth Pattingale of the Milk Carton Kids as a producer? And what was the vision?
You know, some of the songs like Walk In and Bad Little Idea were the first songs to come about. And they're kind of, you know, like, in the line of like some of the songs on Horse County. So I was kind of thinking originally of this as being kind of almost like a Horse County 2, maybe a little more pared down and a little more song focused, but including other musicians. Like I wanted bass and maybe a little bit of percussion and probably some fiddle, you know, just dressing it up a little bit. But Kenneth actually was the person that kind of pointed out, and we've been buds. He lives here in Nashville too. And he kind of pointed out that a lot of those guitar parts were kind of, if I could really kind of tighten those up and lean on those, they're actually quite full, you know, quite complete. And really kind of encouraged me to see what I could do solo. We actually went to go see Leo Kottke together at the City Winery back in fall of, I want to say it was 2017. And, you know, he was just kind of like, you know, like that's like, you could do this, like these songs you're playing me, like those could be like that in a way, or your own version of that, you know, like you have this ability to be a one man show if you want to be. I'm like, and it kind of just got me thinking. So, and at that point, maybe half of the tunes were written. So I kind of reconfigured them, to be solo pieces, and then wrote the rest with that in mind, that they would be solo pieces. And also at that point, I was kind of thinking I would do some flat picking. But I just kind of found that you have just a, you know, when you're not competing with anything and there's no need to be loud or to cut, you know, playing bare fingers, you actually get a much wider kind of dynamic range. So I kind of leaned into that a little more and really kind of strengthened those chops. And then of course, just because Kenneth, he's a card carrying producer. He's produced some great records. He really has quite a pedigree as a producer. And also just his interest in his kind of understanding of this endeavor. I asked him to produce the record and he graciously agreed.
And then what do you think that he thought he was bringing? What was his emphasis besides going, these are good, turn on the recorder? Like, it's a solo project. How did he advise you once he had made the initial encouragement of the direction?
I think a big part was just like, I would play some songs for him and he would kind of be like, there may be like a little, mostly just keeping it honest, keeping it focused. He would kind of be like, that, you know, that little part right there sounds outside of the world. And I'd be like, okay, you know. And I kind of take it, you know, it's all very lighthearted and very kind of grain of salty, taken with a grain of salt.
Well, but, he's a salty, funny man.
He is. Yeah. He very much is. So that kind of just kind of keeping things focused and a cohesive world. At least it's in, he was kind of important in the inception of the music in that regard. But then recording, he just has a great ear for vintage gear and just kind of capturing in a way that's colorful but kind of transparent and lets the music shine. So the way he recorded, I love the way it sounds. I love what he did, the way he recorded it and the way he mixed it. And then also just kind of picking tapes, you know, takes, a lot of times when you're, you know, when practicing this music, I'd be trying to refine things. That was a big process of getting all this together, trying to refine my playing, trying to refine my singing. Cause both of those kind of playing in that style is relatively new and experimental for me. And then singing, is also still a relatively new thing. So, you know, we put a bunch of stuff down and then he was kind of instrumental in maybe picking the thing that seemed most intriguing to him as opposed to the most refined.
It's technically demanding music. I can play this style to a point, but if I try to record myself, it's just clam city. For you, is the technical difficulty something that, you know, requires lots of takes, or do you feel like it's more a matter of which one is sort of got the shading you like and you can pretty much knock these things out?
Yeah, it's probably the latter. I kind of did most of the, you know, the work of getting it together physically, at home, you know, and just kind of like the arrangements were more or less, set in stone by the time we got to the studio.
All right.
But the thing that we did actually, if I could just walk you through the process, we kind of did three chunks of recording sessions, 3 4-hour days in a row. Then I think 2 4-hour days, then like one, like maybe 8 hour, you know, like longer session, about a month apart, September, October, November. And we recorded every single song each time. And then kind of were like, you know, oh, this one, like we got these three from the first session, you know, and then like second one, we got maybe three more. And then the rest of them in the third session. And the main variation between those sessions was actually like kind of an approach to the guitar part. So I wore a thumb pick a lot for the first session. And then the second sessions I wore picks too. And then the third session I just did all bare fingered. So, you know, kind of those just different approaches, balancing the guitar and the vocal, with the, you know, by addressing the guitar playing style was kind of the thing we varied.
The song I grabbed earliest and first to put in my sort of tops of the year playlist is Ghost Story. Just love that. Very counterpointy and so much movement. Just very canny composing. So take me into that song a bit, that piece a bit.
Thanks. So like that first little bit, the kind of walking up arpeggio thing that you hear. I think I was actually staying with I was visiting a friend in New Orleans and I just like woke up after a night of kind of hanging with him and just picked up his guitar and that little bit popped out. And I was like, ooh, that's cool. It's weird. You know, it's like a lot of these kind of weird moments where you're kind of a little bit outside yourself is often I find where like new things come. Mm-hmm. So that little first bit there. And then I just kind of like worked it from there. Actually, that song I tried to write words to and I just couldn't think of anything that felt right. So there's actually like another melody over the top that I had been working on, that like a vocal melody that I just kind of abandoned. I figured it was complete enough as it was. And then, you know, the B part kind of changes keys. That's a thing I often kind of try to do because it's a nice way to create some type of journey when you're from start to finish in harmonically oriented music, you know?
Yeah.
And then it just kind of comes back, fades out. That little brushy thing was also inspired, because I'm hitting a chord with my thumb and then like a shimmery kind of,
yeah, it's really neat thing. Technique.
Yeah, actually I saw Blake Mills doing that. His song, it's called What If I'm Unworthy, off his record that came out a few years ago. He does a kind of a similar thing. It's actually, it ends up sounding different, but just like the idea of like hitting a note and then kind of brushing an upper voice or an upper chord to kind of have that like effervescent fluff happening. That was kind of inspired by that. So
that's cool. The song Creation's Done is darkly funny and a little spooky in its slurry kind of harmonic thing. When did that strike you? And I can imagine Kenneth finding that pretty amusing somehow.
Yeah, no, I remember right after recording, he's like, yeah, I think you got it. It's just a weird song. That one's just going to be weird. I was like, okay, it's going to be weird. All right. But yeah, I had that little kind of dissonant blues
that's
shuffle.
That's what it is. Dissonant blues,
I've had that lying around for a long time and just been searching for the right kind of words to put over that. And that was just like a bunch, you know, writing and rewriting kind of thing. Just looking for, you know, like I went through a range of kind of demented, dark subject matter before I kind of found something I could kind of like flesh out into a song for the lyrics. So that one was just like, all right, I got to make something out of that riff. I love that riff. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, you know, just trial and error was the thing that finally got me to what that song is. Creation's done. God is gone. He did what he does, and he done gone on. But he left some food in the fridge and a big bright sun to keep us warm. Said, look after the place and don't do each other harm. And if I ever come back to see ya, well, I hope you don't forget that the pieces of the game I made for ya, they don't work without the entire set.
Here and there throughout, we hear a real distinct kind of Mississippi John Hurt feel. Like, Tell Me Mama is just that little bounce, that beautiful filigree. And it's almost like that seems like the core genre vibe of where these, of everything else sort of surrounds it. I don't know.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I love Mississippi John Hurt. A lot of his songs are like little like perfect nuggets of song, you know? Mm-hmm. Like something like Payday. I mean, I know a lot of them are also traditional songs, but just the way he frames them and performs them and just kind of wraps them up into a package. There's something just so quintessential. He just turns these traditional pieces into just something so like quintessential with the performance and, you know, that kind of little nugget of song cut type of thing that he has been able to come up with. I just love that and definitely model my own melodies and songs kind of after that.
I can play my guitar, I can sing my songs, but you're about the best thing, oh, that I've got going on. So tell me, dear,